Okay. Just a quick review. If you could, if at all possible, sit where you can see my kind of what I, the best I did with the visual tools that I had. It would have been nice to have a flip chart. That's a not very subtle hint to the organizers. And this is two different pictures. So just pretend it's a flip. Oh, thank you. Just pretend this is a flip chart with two different sheets, and this squiggly white line is separating the two sheets of paper. So just kind of use your imagination there. What we have on this side. Wait, is there a pointer or something? Which is why I'm not sitting on the other side. What we have on this side is basically a summary of what I went over this morning, that this is the process of Krishna consciousness. We start out with Shraddha or faith, then Sadhu Sangha or the association of devotees, then Bhajana Kriya, which starts out unsteady, and remember I said I would discuss that today, unsteady and steady. Bhajana means worship and Kriya means activities. Then there's Nishta or fixed. And this is a real demarcation point. For those of you who read Bhagavad Gita, that's also the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. It's also the platform of liberation. Then from that is Ruchi or taste. From that is Asakti or attachment. Then Bhava or emotion. Then Prema and love. And as Prabhupada said, till the stage of Nista, it's a hard struggle with determination. And after that, things come, relatively speaking, automatically. So you see this guy that's a backpack. I don't know if that's that clear. And inside of his backpack, he has a sled. Thank you very much. That was not my idea. Give credit where it's due. So or his backpack turns into a sled. However you want to say it. It's one of those, you know, real cool gadgets that it's a backpack, it converts to a sled. And when you get up to Nista. Now, why do we say it's the same thing? Because you're doing very similar activities. You're hearing and chanting, you're eating prasadam. It's not that the activities change. But those activities here may seem like a difficulty. And here, they're the source of ecstasy. Now, it's not that there isn't ecstasy here, but not of the same quantity or quality or frequency. As Prabhupada says in the end of Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna consciousness is a thrill experience, not just one time, but a thrill experience at every moment. At this platform, one is not experiencing a thrill at every moment. As I'm sure at least most of this audience is aware. At this platform, one is. But it's essentially the same process. Now, obviously, there's a lot of feeling of spiritual happiness even at this point. It's not that there's none. But it's more like glimpses. Or as one of my friends said, a smell of the ocean. All right, so you all have your sheets there. A chart for this morning, and you were all very attentive this morning and really thoroughly assimilated everything we discussed, right? Yes, teacher, we did. So what I would like you all to do right now is just without looking at your sheets, if at all possible. You can look at your sheets if you really have to. Without looking at your sheets and without looking at the board, and you're all big boys and girls, and you can do that, okay? And no one's going to grade you or test you or anything, no. I won't know, okay? Work with the person next to you. When you're just going to take 10 minutes for this. Work with the person next to you and ask them to list as many of the stages, either the Sanskrit names or the English names, and describe at least one of the qualities that demarcate each of the stages. So one person tests the other, and the other, you know, take... Just turn to whoever's sitting next to you, unless you really don't like them, in which case you should sit someplace else. And then, you know, person A quizzes person B, and then person B quizzes person A. Thank you. I hope all of you got a chance to finish or at least come pretty close to it. How many of you were able to remember all of the stages? How many able all remember all but one? All but two. If you haven't already, take a look back at your charts right now just take a quick look at your charts for a couple minutes. Take a look at it and note whatever areas that you missed. And kind of solidify that in your memory. Yeah, this is the way that these are. Is it should actually be all on one page so that the columns are all.
Can Anartha Nivritti happen down this side as well?
Anartha Nivritti is happening constantly. The main Anartha Nivritti period is during the phase of unsteady devotional service or Bhajana Kriya. So once you take up Bhajana Kriya, once you take up the activities of devotion, you really start actively getting rid of your unwanted things. Now, unartha, artha means a goal. We talk about artha means economic development. It's something you want, something that's wanted, basically. Artha is something you want. Unartha is something you don't want, or you shouldn't want. It's junk. You know, just like some people collect junk in their wardrobes and their garages and whatever, you know. So those are your unarthas. Oh, we used to do a play regularly for the Sunday feast where this guy wants to cross the river to reach the spiritual world, but he wants to bring his bag of rocks with him. You ever seen that play? You know, he's got his bank rock and his job rock and his family rock and his false ego rock. And, you know, you can't swim across the river if you're carrying this bag of rocks. So the rocks are our anarthas. Now, the anarthas are not totally gone at the stage of nishta, which is also in Bhagavatam, nasta prayeshu abhadreshu, nityam bhagavata sevaya, bhagavata uttama sloki, bhakti bhavati naishtiki, naishtiki is nishta. And nasta prayeshu abhadreshu, they're almost gone. Oh, I like that. Where did you get that shirt? Yeah. Where did you get that shirt?
Taragami.
Yes, Bendo, could show everybody that shirt? I hope I'm not embarrassing you. If I am, I'm sorry.
Oh, I see.
Really? At first I was thinking, why is this guy here wearing this Coca-Cola? And then I looked at it more closely, you know, and I was, oh, okay, that's nice. Now, I hope I didn't embarrass him. Please excuse me if I embarrass him. So basically what happens is that because when one starts the process of engaging in Bhajana Kriya, one still has a lot of anarthas, before you can experience transcendence, you have to get rid of the anarthas. If you, a few weeks ago I was helping somebody clean out a house, and we were cleaning down everything in the house. And when we clean the inside of the windows, the cloth would get black. So if there's all this gunk on your windows, you can't see outside. Chaita Darpana Marjanam. By chanting, we're cleansing the mirror of the mind. So this Anartha Nivritti process is that cleansing. And you get to a point where it may not be totally clean, but you can see out the window. So the nishta is like that. There's still some stuff. There's still some stuff until prema. But starting at nishta, you can really see out the window. Until then, when you see yourself, you're mostly seeing the contaminated self. You're looking in this filthy mirror, and mostly what you see by chanting is the filth. And as you start getting rid of it, gradually, 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 you'll see your real reflection in the mirror. You'll start to see your siddhadeya, your spiritual body. So, you know, generally, as I said earlier, we don't like cleaning off the filth because we don't like admitting we have any filth. But it's only by doing that that one sees one's spiritual body. Okay, I talked about the symptoms of nishta, our steadiness. Remember I was saying steadiness of the body, mind, and words? And what usually comes first is the body, and then is words, and then is mind. But that's not always true. Some people are first steady in the mind. It depends. If a person has great mental strength, they may first always think about Krishna, even if they're not always steady in their bodily activity. So sort of keep that in mind. One important point, which I mentioned briefly before, is that there's also steadiness in qualities, things like humility and compassion and cleanliness, the Vaishnav ornaments. If you find someone who's steady in qualities but not steady in devotion to Krishna, they're not considered at nishta. But if they're steady in devotion to Krishna and not yet steady in the qualities, they are considered at nishta. So NISTA is not totally clean. You'll find someone at NISTA still has traces as compared to if you have camphor, which smells very strong, and you kept it in a pot. You take the camphor out of the pot still smells like camphor. That is the platform of liberation. NISTA is the beginning of the platform of freedom. So someone who's liberated, you can't fall down from NISTA, but it is a platform of liberation. Someone who's liberated may still exhibit some camphor smell. And they may not always be steady in Vaishnav qualities. So please keep that in mind. And again, some people can be fairly steady in qualities but not be steady in devotion. So the symptoms of unsteadiness. Okay, this just kind of grit your teeth for a minute, all right? These are the symptoms of unsteadiness, and these are in order. When one first takes up Vajra Kriya, the first symptom of unsteadiness is false confidence. The five-year-old comes home from school and says, I know how to read. And what can they read? The fat cat sat on the mat with the tan hat. You know. So you come, and you chant Hare Krishna, and you say, oh, I experience love of God. Because compared to what you've experienced materially, it feels like that. You know, compared to material experience, this little teeny tiny drop of nectar that you're getting feels like you're just swimming in this ocean, and like my eyes are open, and I'm just like, woo! You know, and you've made this one little baby step, and you think, I am a spiritual person. So, yes, we probably, many of us have some embarrassing stories in that regard of how we were taken a little down from our post of that. So that's the first, is this false confidence. A sign of real advancement is humility. Then the next is sporadic endeavors, another symptom. That's, this is again in progressing order, that one says, okay, all right, I'm going to chant 32 rounds every day. I'm going to read Bhagavad Gita for 2 hours a day. I'm going to get up at 2 in the morning. And you do that for 3 days. Oh, it's too hard. All right, I did that. I deserve a break. And then the next week you kind of kick back. And then, I haven't been doing very well for about a week. I think I'm going to get, and you go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Sometimes you're really enthusiastic and you're really trying hard, and other times you say, I think I need a vacation from all this casey stuff. It's a little too much. I think I'm going to sleep till 8 in the morning for a while. The next symptom of unsteady endeavor, I told you have to grit your teeth for this. It's not so pleasant. Especially if you're at the false confidence platform, this stuff is not going to be terribly pleasant to hear. The next thing is indecision about service. Should I work at this job? It's just really Maya. All the people at the job, all they ever talk about is sports and politics. Maybe I should just give up working and just go to India and live in the Holy Dham. But I'm not ready to live in the Holy Dham. Live in the Holy Dham, I'll probably just fall down. I have a desire for money. Maybe I should stay in the West and work at a job. Should I get married? Maybe I should just be a sannyasi. I don't know if I can make it as a sannyasi. I think about girls too much, but if I get married, it's so entangling. I don't know. Okay, it's another symptom of unsteadiness. You can't decide what you want to do. Should I do this? Should I do that? Is this Maya? Is this Krishna? I don't know, And that's one of the big questions, and I hate to say this, but as I travel around the world, these are the, right there at the top of the list of the kind of questions that I get. Should I do this? Should I do this? Is this better for my Krishna consciousness? Or is this better for my Krishna consciousness? Should I live with my parents? Should I live on my own? Should I live in the church? Should I get married? Should I not get married? And you're spending so much of your consciousness instead of just doing what Krishna gives you and being happy with it. And being able to honestly assess your position and just sticking with it. Looking at yourself and saying, okay, this is where I'm at. This is what I need. Let me stick to it and do it nicely and make progress and be happy. Okay, next is not being able to give up bad things. Making a decision, all right, I'm not going to do this anymore. Whether it's something gross like, I'm not going to drink alcohol anymore, to something subtle like I'm not going to criticize anymore. Burjan Prabhu tells this story of how, it's a month of Kartik, it's a holy month, and many times devotees take vows that they're going to either not do something or do something during Kartik. And I was in Vrindavan last summer for Purushottam month, which is the extra lunar month added every 3 years to balance out the calendar with the solar calendar, which is also a holy month. So I was staying at the house of one devotee who told me that she reads the whole Bhagavatam. The whole Bhagavatam. I said, just the verses? No, she said, the whole Bhagavatam. Every Purushottamas. Okay. Isn't it nice to meet devotees who really make you feel kind of lowly, kind of scrambling on the floor? And so there was one other devotee who was also visiting, and our hostess said to her, "What vow are you taking for Purushottama?" She said, "I am vowing to eat one maha sweet every day." She said, "I know I can keep that one." Anyway. So devotees often take vows at these times. And Burjampa was saying how one time at Kartik, he met a devotee who said, "The vow I'm taking is that for this whole month of Kartik, I'm not going to criticize anyone." So that's unusual. Usually you take a vow to chant extra or to be austere in your eating or something like that, to do extra shastra reading. So Burjampa said he was thinking about this and he said, "Well, that sounds like a really nice vow. I think I'll try that." He said he didn't last a day. So This unsteadiness is the inability to give up something bad. You know, we go to Krishna, we say, "Krishna, I'm never going to do this again. I swear, I promise you, from this day on, I'm never going to do this again." And isn't it an hour later that you go, "Oh my God, I just did it again." Then the next symptom of unsteadiness is the inability to take up good things. So one says, you know, "I'm going to read Bhagavad Gita an hour a day," and you don't do it. You know, "I'm going to get up at 3 every morning," and it, again, lasts for a day. It lasts for 2 days. And finally, at the final stages of unsteadiness, is taking pleasure in, enjoying, exploiting the opulences given by bhakti. Because if you take up bhakti, people will naturally respect you as a religious person. And you start getting facility. The material energy even starts cooperating with you to some extent. And if one starts enjoying that, if one starts thinking, "Oh, now I'm seen as a religious person, or I'm seen as a saintly person, and people are offering me respect, and, you know, I get a nice plate of Mahaprasadam, and somebody washes it for me, and whatever." You know, and you start thinking, "Well, I'm a great person, let me just enjoy this." So that's another anartha. So I made a little diagram here, another symptom rather of unsteadiness, not anartha, sorry. I made a little diagram here. That one is also an anartha. Because bhakti is often compared to a plant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compared the process of bhakti or devotion to a plant. So here we have the plant of devotion. And on this plant there's a bud, a sakti or attachment to Krishna is compared to a bud. Then we have the flower, which is bhava, and the fruit, which is prema. So of course, they're not all going to be appearing exactly at the same time. Although when you have the fruit of prema, you naturally have all of the... It encompasses all the good qualities of the lower symptoms, obviously. Now, on this plant here of bhakti, we have weeds. So the weeds here symbolize the anartha. It's both a symptom and an anartha, a block, an unwanted thing, of wanting to enjoy the benefits of bhakti. And the reason I've represented this as weeds is that when you are cultivating and watering the plant of bhakti, it's those things that grow up simultaneously. As you're cultivating bhakti, what comes along with it are respect and facility. So therefore, it's a weed. Then I have here that there are bugs. So these bugs is the anartha of offenses. The bugs make the plant sick and weaken it. They draw out the life juice from the plant. They stunt its growth. And then I also have here the quality of the soil. So if you have good quality soil, your plant's going to grow better than if you have poor quality soil. And I'm comparing that, and some of these are mine, some of these are shastric, and some of them are just mine. That the quality of the soil represents the anartha from our previous both bad and good actions. And then what's making the bhakti creeper grow, or what makes plants grow, is water. And the water are the 9 processes of devotional service, which I'll get to in a second. And then you also need sunlight, and here I'm comparing the sunlight to the mercy. If you want to know what's from me and what's from the scriptures, plant is from the scriptures, weeds from the scriptures, water from the scriptures, fruit bud, flower from the scriptures, and the buds, the soil quality, and the sun is from me. So if you want to distinguish that one. If you have any interest in repeating something, being able to cite a bona fide source, which does not include me. So these anarthas basically... Previous good and bad actions, which is here represented by the quality of the soil, the weeds that watered along with the bhakti plant, and the bugs of offenses are the 3 things which produce those 5 symptoms of unsteadiness. If you can think of unsteadiness as like the plant is disease. It's not stable. Another way you can think of it, those of you who've grown plants, oftentimes you start the plant indoors or in a greenhouse, and only once the plant is really strong will you put it outside. Mm-hmm. So if you think of the stage of nishtha is when you can put the plant outside. Until the stage of nishtha, your plant is unsteady. It's unstable. It's somewhat sick. Starting at nishtha is a stage of health. Until nishtha, we're still in a very diseased condition. And what's causing that disease condition is the quality of the soil, the bugs, and the weeds. The quality of the soil, the bugs, and the weeds. So let's look at each of these individually. The quality of the soil represents the reactions to our previous actions, either good or bad. So if we performed sinful activities in the past, one of the reactions to that is a tendency to continue sinning. Reactions to sins are not just that you may get sick or you may get poor or somebody will insult you or something like that. But reactions to sins is also you develop a sinful proclivity. It brings out desires to sin. It covers you with ignorance. It infuses you with envy and malice and hatred. And it brings out nasty qualities in you. Sin is not just something that it says in the scriptures you shouldn't do by some, you know, old fogies who didn't want you to have any fun. It's things that actually bring out bad qualities in you that make you miserable. Sin is something like putting something in your mouth that's not food, like if I decided to eat this paper. It's something that's not in harmony with my body. Sin is anything that's, it's untruth. And therefore it produces all kinds of reactions. So if we've done sinful activity, then they bring out bad qualities in us. They illusion us. So that it's difficult for us to take up bhakti. Now, if we've done good things, they also have a bad reaction. And that is, if we've done pious activities, then we're attached to righteous enjoyment. The person who wants to find pleasure by being a righteous, moral family person, enjoying with their wife, husband, children, earning money honestly, paying their taxes, being a good citizen, known as an upright member of the community, that attitude is a reaction to past pious activities. But that's also a materialistic attitude. It's a better materialistic attitude than thinking, you know, I want to rob and steal and rape and plunder. But it's still a materialistic attitude. It's in the mode of passion rather than the mode of ignorance. Then a reaction to past pious activities in the mode of goodness that's an impediment to bhakti is wanting liberation. This desire, I just want to be free of the world. This place is a place of suffering. Just get me out of here. You know, I don't want to have any more desire. I don't want to have any more identity. But all those things are unwanted things. Okay. Then we have, as we talked about, the weeds. The weeds are wanting to enjoy, wanting to get material enjoyment out of being a devotee. Now, all those things will be more or less automatically taken care of if you engage in the process of bhakti. You don't really need to worry about dealing with your past pious and sinful reactions. The only thing you need to worry about dealing with the weeds is to be able to recognize them as weeds and pull them out when they're small. And if you're engaged in nice bhakti, you will. Krishna will reveal within your heart, you know, this has nothing to do with devotion. This is just you want to be recognized and pat on the head and, you know, given some position in society. And you say, no, get rid of that one. Our problem is the bugs. Bhakti is going to destroy reactions to past karma, and it's going to destroy basically all of our material attachments. But our problem is the bugs. So although these other things can also impede the growth of bhakti, we don't really need to be concerned with them. I don't know if I've ever told this to you guys, and if I have, please excuse me, but it's one of my favorite stories. There was this company that had a big boiler. Did I tell the story before about the broken boiler? I didn't. Oh, great. So this company had a broken boiler, and they called all these people to fix it, and nobody had been able to fix it. Called person after person, you know, and they'd fix it maybe for a day or two, a week or two, and then it would break down. So finally one of the employees said, I have a really great boiler repairman. And they brought him out, and he turns it off, turns it on, walks around, listens to it, taps it here and there, is checking it out. Then finally, after doing that for about a half an hour, he takes out a hammer, bangs it really hard in one place, turns it on, says, if it's still working in 2 weeks, let me know and I'll send you a bill. They're working in 2 weeks. They let him know he sends them a bill for £5,000. The president of the company says, that's kind of a lot. Yeah. He says, would you send us an itemized bill, please? So he sends him back, and he says, £5 for hitting the boiler, £4,995 for knowing where to hit. So there's really only one place, and this is all you remember, it'll be enough. There's only one place you really have to hit, and that's on the offenses. And there's only one offense you really have to deal with, and that's inattention to children. If you only do one thing, be attentive and chanting. If that's all you do, be attentive and chanting consistently, and everything else will be taken care of. I mean everything. If that's all you can do, if you can't do anything else, that will eliminate all of your other offenses, it will eliminate all your other anarthas, and you'll come to nishtha.
What does it mean to be attentive? I mean, are you just thinking of a picture?
Come tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock to find out what it means to be attentive and how to do it.
Right.
I'm going to go over that only the most brief here and now. And I'm going to discuss a way of being attentive and a way of thinking about attentiveness that unless you already heard Bhakti Vigyan Swami Maharaj's seminars that you probably haven't already heard, that you haven't heard before. I think you'll really enjoy it. But that's the crux. Right now I'm not going to tell you the how, but I'm going to tell you the why, which I went over a little bit before. That when you chant attentively, you're in the presence of Krishna and he reveals what all your other problems are. Everything else becomes obvious. And you only have one other job to do after that is listen to what he's telling you. And my own conclusion is that if you chant attentively, you have to listen to what he's telling you or you'll go mad. You'll get to what the psychologists call cognitive dissonance. Because you'll be aware that you're doing something wrong and you're not doing anything about it and it'll drive you nuts. And so if you don't follow what Krishna's revealing to you, you'll stop chanting attentively, basically, because it'll be too much for you. So if you consistently chant attentively, you simply will be inspired to choose the right thing. Not because you're being forced, but because it'll be so obvious that you just won't be able to deny it. It'll just be right in front of your face. You know, the jar of poison will just say, "Poison! Poison! Poison!" You know, it'll be almost impossible. And if you want to know my own opinion about why people end up with the snick snip nom nom, you know, and the kind of... It's because, you know, they don't want to go through the process, basically, of being, you know, they want to say, hey, let me just drink my poison without knowing that I'm... But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very clear, and Vishnu Shakravati Thakur is very clear, that the key to all the other offenses is inattention. Now, inattention, however, is not the worst of the offenses. The worst of the offenses is sometimes given as blaspheming devotees, sometimes given as sinning on the strength of chanting, and sometimes given as disobeying the orders of the guru. So as far as what is the worst offense, those three are often cited in the scriptures as the most damaging offense. And of the three, offending devotees is compared to an elephant that runs through your garden and knocks over your little plant. The effect can be very devastating very, very quickly. So again, why do we focus on attentive chanting? Because when you chant attentively, you'll become aware, oh, I'm offending devotees. Oh, I'm sinning on the strength of chanting, which can be a very subtle thing, by the way. Oh, I'm disobeying the orders of the guru. And then when you see it clearly, you will be inclined to give it up if you continue to chant attentively. Basically, once you work on those, on getting rid of your offenses and chanting, and also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that other offenses in bhakti, like say offenses to the deity, can be removed by chanting properly without offense. Now, if you intentionally commit offenses to the deity, thinking you're going to chant without offense, that's an offense to chanting. That's sinning on the strength of chanting. You can't play games with Krishna. I mean, he doesn't, except in the spiritual world as a cowherd boy. But, you know, otherwise he'll outmove you on the chessboard, so it's not a very good idea. So one shouldn't intentionally commit offenses. But if we unintentionally commit other offenses in bhakti, they will be removed by chanting. So the only thing one needs to worry about in Vajrayana Kriya is offenses in chanting itself. And if all the offenses in chanting itself, concentrate on being attentive. That doesn't mean one shouldn't become aware of the other things or know about the other things. Now, why don't we just briefly list what are the offenses on chanting? Number one is two. Blasphemy the devotees. Next is, okay, consider the names of demigods to be the same as the Lord. I'll just very briefly say, sometimes it says consider the demigods to be different from the Lord, and sometimes that's described, in other words, that one sees that they're also representatives of the Lord, one shouldn't disrespect them. Sometimes that offense is also described that one shouldn't discriminate between names of God. One shouldn't say, you know, like our religion is better than your religion kind of thing. Okay, third offense? Disobey yours as a spiritual master. Fourth? Blaspheme Vedic literature. So one shouldn't blaspheme the scriptures, even if there's parts of the scriptures that are preaching something lower to bring people gradually to an elevated platform. One shouldn't blaspheme scriptures of other religions that are genuine religions but maybe teaching things on a lower level. Okay, next. Consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna's imagination. So why do we think that they're imaginary? Because we live in the world of the senses, and anything that's on the spiritual platform seems to us as ethereal. Next. To give some interpretation on the holy name. In other words, to concoct something. Well, really, it means this and this and this and this. You know, straight out, it means Krishna, please let me serve you. Next. Commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting. This is a really intense cheating mentality. This is why we're here in the first place. We want to use Krishna for our own purposes. So it's, I want to use Krishna to do what I want. I want to exploit Krishna. So I'm going to be a religious person so that I can be a cheater. I'm going to become a policeman so I can commit crimes in my policeman uniform. The worst criminal. Causes the most damage to society. So next. Okay, so to think of chanting Hare Krishna as something that's a mundane ritual, that's just pious, instead of something totally transcendental. Next. To instruct a faithless person about the glories of the holy name. So why this is an offense, what does Jesus say? Don't put your pearls before swine, because then they will simply trample it under their feet. So if you have something very valuable, let's say you give me something valuable, and, you know, then you watch as I just go and kind of throw it in the gutter, you'll be offended. So we get the holy name from the spiritual master. We get the holy name from the guru, and then if we just give it to people who disrespect it, then Krishna's offended. Next. Okay, this is a very interesting offense. To not take complete shelter of the holy name, and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. What that offense is, you're chanting with attention, and Krishna says, here's your problem, and you say, forget it, buddy. I'm not dealing with it. And the reason that's an offense, again, it's just like, well, I've talked about cleaning. So your friend invites you over. I finally decided I'm going to clean out my closets. I haven't cleaned them for 20 years. Would you come and help? You know, so you get all excited and you put on your grungy clothes and you go over there and you're going through the closets and you say to your friend, yeah, what is this? It's all full of mildew and it's all rotten. They go, oh, that was my aunt's house. We've had it in my family for generations. We can't throw that away. And you go, okay. Okay, let's look at this. This is nice. All right. But what's this? Oh, my God. It's all eaten by moths. Have you ever used this? Have you used this in the last 5 years? You say, oh, we can't throw that away. My kid made that when he was two. You know, and as you're going through the closet and you refuse to throw anything away, after about an hour of this, what are you going to say to your friend?
Do you actually want to get rid of this stuff?
What are you going to say? Yeah. Where are you going to go?
Home.
Home. You're going to say to them, call me again when you're ready. So that's an offense. You're calling Krishna. You're saying, Jnana Deepena Bhashvata, Krishna, please light up, give me enlightenment. Give me enlightenment. Krishna says, fine. Here I am. See how sweet and beautiful I am? Here's illusion. See how ugly it is? And here's you. I know you don't look so good right now because there's some dirt on your mirror, but here's you. And this is, if you really want to clean the mirror and see your own beauty and glory and spiritual power, come on, take the rag, clean off the mirror. Go away! Krishna in effect goes away. So someone's asking, well, can Krishna really go away? No, but you're going like this. You're saying, I don't want to sit. Okay? So those are the offenses on chant. Basically, if one takes care, if one is chanting and taking care of the offenses, especially attention, one will progress very, 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 very quickly to the stage of steadiness, which is what we want. All right. Did any of you write down a description of a devotee? Probably none of you actually did. You're all busy all day. Oh, great. Few of you did. Okay, what I'm going to do, if I can find my second open. I went through this rather quickly, but I'm going to go through that. I'm going to sit up here so you can all see me a little bit, just for a second. I'm going to go through this a little bit more slowly right now. And I would like you to tell me at what stage you think this person is at and why. And then I'm going to sit back down again. You have to move it. I'm really a problem. Okay, I think I'll do this one. So here we're going to have Krishna Dasi. Okay, that's a nice generic name. For my own students, I always used to use Krishna Das, and then one of the devotees in our community got initiated as Krishna Das. You know, it ruined the whole thing. We already had a Ram Das. I was really stuck, you know, a Jiva Das or something. Okay, so Krishna Dasi, or Krishna Das, or Ram Das, or whatever, you know, some generic name, Bhakta, is always ready to serve the devotees. This one, we're going to have this one be a lady. She loves to do simple, humble service. Her home is always clean and fresh. She rarely, if ever, criticizes devotees and tries her best to encourage everyone in devotional service. I made this person up. This is not any of you, okay, at all. I mean, I was back in America when I wrote this. She has only the basic material necessities in her possession, eats what she needs, rarely speaks frivolously, and generally remains composed even in the most difficult of life's trials. She usually chants her 16 rounds and daily gayatris, but sometimes fails to do so. She loves to read Prabhupada's books. Sometimes she reads fashion magazines and watches mundane movies a few times a year. When she takes a long drive, sometimes she drinks caffeinated drinks to stay awake. She's married and has young children, and her conversations with others are often about practical matters of taking care of her family. She likes listening to Krishna conscious classes and hearing lectures, but often her mind wanders during the lectures, and she ends up listening to a class only about 1 or 2 days a week. Okay, some idea as to what stage this person is at and why. Yes. Okay, why? Okay. Other thoughts? That's a good answer. Yes.
Yes, she does do the things, but I think one of the key things was that you said that sometimes she deviates, she doesn't quite do it.
Okay, sometimes so she deviates. So what platform is she at?
She's unsteady.
Unsteady, okay. Any other thoughts? Yes.
I think it's that Sadhu Sangha, because you said to drink caffeinated drink, and if you're initiated, you won't do that, so you're like above that.
Or she might be initiated in not following your vows. Possible.
You mentioned she's doing Gayatri, so yeah.
She must be, yeah. She must be having a second initiation, but she's not following strictly, yes?
I'm asking you
this. Okay.
Because she's not obviously not steady enough, because sometimes she misses her own, but she's accepted, she's gone through all the other, like, she associates with devotees, she listens to class like as much as she can. She's taken initiation and she's working on clearing her offences, but she's still sitting up.
Okay, some other ideas? Yes.
I think she's on Bhajana Kriya because she seems to be sometimes indecisive about going to classes and then getting lost.
Right, okay. Yes? Okay. Okay. What are you going to do with all these good qualities she manifests? Any thoughts on that? It helps the clearing process. Would most people consider her steady in Vaishnava qualities? Yes. Yes. She doesn't criticize people. She likes to serve the devotee. She likes to do simple, humble service. I intentionally put in here some of the 26 qualities of a devotee. She doesn't eat too much. She doesn't have a lot of material possessions. So she has a lot of steadiness and Vaishnava qualities, but she's lacking steadiness in devotional activities. So she's not at Nishta, and she's somewhere in unsteady devotional service, probably in the process of clearing out her anarthas. Okay, now I'm going to go through a little bit more slowly than what I read earlier. And I was going to have you do it in groups, but I don't think there's time for you to both write one and evaluate one. And since only some of you did it, I apologize to those of you who did it. And what I suggest that those of you who did do it is get together with somebody else later and work at evaluating where you think the devotee's at. So this one, we'll have this one be a guy. So this will be, well, what should we name him? Gopal Das, I hope. So this is Gopal. I wrote this in America. It's a compilation. So Gopal Das gets up at 2 o'clock every morning, and he's done that for 15 years. He chants all of his rounds before Mangal Artik every day. He spends his japa, and I know some people who do this, by the way. As I say, these are all compilations of people. He spends japa period reading Prabhupada's books and taking extensive notes, works a full-time job to support his family, does deity worship at the temple 2 days a week, distributes Prabhupada's books every Saturday at the temple Harinam. Gopal Das usually tries to think about the Maha Mantra when he chants, but his mind often wanders. Sometimes he knowingly allows himself to get distracted while chanting. He likes to attend festivals and devotional seminars, but sometimes ends up socializing or sleeping when the kirtans or classes are going on. Many devotees like talking to him because he often brings some aspect of Krishna conscious philosophy into conversations. Sometimes he finds himself criticizing devotees when speaking to others, and sometimes speaks of basically useless things, but he's learning to recognize when he does this and brings the conversation back to Krishna. His mind sometimes wanders to thoughts of sinful activity, even though he follows the regular principles. Sometimes he quickly pulls his mind back to Krishna, and sometimes he allows his mind to dwell on these matters for quite some time. He often finds his chanting and other spiritual practices dry and thinks of himself as a very serious, strict devotee who's relatively advanced in spiritual life. Okay, some ideas just about our Gopal Das. Yes?
Shakti, because you're talking about the mind. Meditation,
because you can't
take our mind
through the connection to Krishna from Maya. Other thoughts, yes?
But he doesn't seem to have a taste
for chanting.
Yeah, so I'd say Nishta, because even if he doesn't have a taste, he's still trying to be steady and he's still trying to clear his emotions.
Okay, yeah.
I say Nishta with anatta nivritti as well, because he's still... Yeah.
Okay.
Can you have the two together?
Well, I said these stages, there's not an absolute line that somebody's fully at one stage or another. Yes?
He's unsteady in the spiritual activities, unsteady in qualities.
He's definitely unsteady in qualities. He's steady in his devotional activities, at least external. At least he's steady in what? He's steady in the three? Body. He's steady in the body. Is he steady in words? No. Is he steady in mind? No. Does he always pull his mind back? No. So he's probably at higher stages of Vajna Kriya and Narjana Vritti. But there's one thing that really indicates to us here that he has some big problem with unsteadiness. And what is that? False confidence. Okay? He's got a lot of false confidence, which is a symptom of very early unsteady devotional service. So he's got some major problem that he hasn't dealt with, and that he probably hasn't dealt with for a very, very long time. Do you see how these things can, they're a little fluid? Mm-hmm. That there's many ways in which he's approaching Nishta, in some ways more than the other person that I mentioned. But there's some major block. And by the way, this is so common. It's so common to find a person who's doing really, really well, and they have one thing or two things that they haven't wanted to deal with for 15 or 20 years. It's just such a common thing. And after a while, that one thing or two things become obvious to everybody but them. Not that long ago, I was staying with a devotee, wonderful, 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 what a top preacher. And after staying there for about 3 weeks, this devotee said to me, "Mother Irmala, can you please tell me if there's anything I need to improve?" And I said, I think you're doing everything fine. And they kept saying, "Is there anything I need to you know, harassing me. And finally I said, well, I do think there's something, but I don't really think I want to say what it is. And it kept harassing me. And I said, well, you had a tragedy in your life many years ago, and you're still angry at Krishna about it. You've never accepted that it was Krishna's mercy. You hate Krishna for it. You're angry at him for it. You don't think you deserved it. You think that Krishna should have treated you better. You've never really accepted it. And I said, I see that influences all of your preaching and all of your service. It pervades everything you say and everything you do, even though you're not aware of it. And this person said, well, you're right. I really do have an issue with it. I said, if you just take care of that one thing, I said, you'll probably come to Nishtha almost immediately because everything else you have in place. And I doubt very much that the person did it. But that's a very, very common phenomenon. That there's, you know, we've got this one big rock that we really like, that maybe we've been holding on for maybe even more than this life. And we really like it. You know, we think it's awfully special. And we're afraid that if we give it up, we won't have anything. Okay, the other thing that I didn't get into that much was the sunlight and the water. So this water are the nine processes. And the nine processes are hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers or obeisances, serving the lotus feet, which means serving the devotees, going to holy places. Traveling to, yes. Worshipping the deity, becoming Krishna's friend, which is a really nice thing to think about, becoming Krishna's friend, and I have a class I've given on that. A really nice thing to meditate. And then fully surrendering to Krishna. So that's what's watering the plant of bhakti. So, of course, in addition to not having the buds, you have to be giving it water. You have to be in the process of bhajana kriya. But just water alone is not going to do it. You have to have sunlight. You have to have mercy. And Prabhupada says that it's not just, you know, going through the mechanical processes. So the sunlight is the mercy of the devotees and the mercy of Krishna. They have to be giving you grace. You know, if you just have sun and you don't have water, your plant's going to die. And if you just have water and you don't have sun, your plant's going to die. Great. Wow, I'm actually like on time. Huh, I can't believe it. All right. Now what I'd like all of you to do, I'm actually even a little ahead of time, it's amazing. Yeah, but let's make it real brief. I don't want to get behind time, then I won't be happy.
Okay, I'm
going to
go have
to prepare
some invention.
Yes.
For 15 years, if he's got some, he still has some analysis, and if he doesn't consciously work on it, but he still wakes up at 2 o'clock and he's just chanting and he goes at 19 and he reads reads Prabhupada's books or the scriptures, will he be fixed?
Will it be fixed eventually?
Yes.
What generally happens to people if they're holding on to some anartha over a very long period of time, what do you think happens to their chanting? Their chanting becomes what? They may still be doing it, but it generally becomes what? Inattentive. Because if you're chanting attentively, you have to face your stuff. They just... You make an experiment. Try chanting attentively, doing your best to chant attentively every mantra of every round for a month, and then not dealing with the problems that become revealed to you. See if you can do it. Challenge it. I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can do it. Your level of awareness, your level of consciousness becomes so heightened. You become very, very aware. I mean, it's just, material things become disgusting to you. Ravindra Suprabhu tells a story of how he first visited the temple and the devotees told him to chant. And he went home and started chanting. And he felt great spiritual happiness. And then very quickly, like within a week, he lost interest in almost everything else in his life. You know what he said he did after that? Guess what he said he did after that week?
Sold his TV.
No, he stopped chanting. Stopped chanting. He decided this is that's not really a reflection on who he is now, but you know, he stopped chanting. He said he realized he was playing with something very, very powerful.
Isn't all you need.
Well, you also need to choose.
That's all you need, but it's not all you
No, if you keep chanting attentively, your other offenses will go away. They just can't coexist. Wherever there's Krishna, there's not Maya. Isn't that our slogan, I'm back to God? If you're fully in the presence of God, how do we choose illusion? We do what? There's Krishna. We go like this. Bahirmukhi. We turn our face. Of course, Krishna's everywhere. So you can't really turn your face on Krishna, but he's merciful, so he allows you to be in an illusion that you don't see him anymore. I don't see him. Right? Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochana Santa Sadaiva Vidayeshu Vilokanti Yanshama Sundarama Chinchubinama Sarupam. If you have love, you see him in every atom. If you're in the presence of Krishna, everything's illuminated. Right? If you've got a room full of junk and you turn on the light, how are you not going to see the junk? You know, you've seen the you turn on the light. There's a rat in the corner. What are you going to do? You're just going to sit there and look at it and say, "Hi." You're either going to do something about it, or you're going to walk out of the room. I hope. So one sees things accurately. I was mentioning to someone the other day. I mean, I give this analogy all the time. That, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Greek mythology. Actually, Prabhupada quotes from the story of Ulysses, the Odyssey. He quotes from a different part of it, but the story, you all know the story of the sirens, where we get the word siren in English? Right, there was this island of cannibalistic witches, but they would sing, and their singing was magic, and when you heard their singing, you thought they were beautiful women on Paradise Island, you know? So Ulysses told his men to clog their ears, and he said, "Tie me to the mast, you clog your ears, and whatever orders I give while we go past this island, ignore me." Because he wanted to check it out. You know, and he was irresistibly drawn that he wanted to take the ship to the island, and the men looked there and they just saw a desert full of witches. And they were rowing away as fast as they could. Prabhupada says on the stage of Bhava, one does not fall down because one sees Maya for what it is. And he says in first canto that when you're in the presence of Krishna, you see the naked form of Maya. You see it for what it is. If you see Maya for what it is, if you don't see the illusion, if you see the reality, it's not attractive. It just isn't. It's revolting. People don't smoke because they see smoking honestly. Nobody who sees smoking honestly would smoke. They see it as a way to be attractive. It's a way to have, you know, stinky breath and yellow teeth and clogged up lungs. And it's disgusting. So as soon as you see it for what it is, it's not attractive. And it's not just that Krishna is showing you how nasty Maya is, he's also showing you himself. And you see how wonderful Krishna is. He's beautiful. And it's just like reading in Prema, you know. He's beautiful and he's sweet and he's compassionate and he's playful and he's fun. You know, in his eternal party. And you think, yeah, I want to go there. You know, what do I want to be on this island with witches? We're going to eat me. Mm-hmm. You know, when there's an eternal party going on by the bank of the Yamuna. Right? You know. Let me get my act cleaned up so I can go there quickly. Right? Is that clear? Don't go around looking. You can look at other people to see how this is true, but don't look at other people to criticize. But if it's very clear that someone has some long-standing anartha and they're still doing the externals, pay some attention to how they're chanting. You'll notice. It's quite... Once I become aware of this, very obvious. Of course, some things you can't see externally. Okay. I'd like all of you now on your own paper, just individually, to write down some reasons, if you can remember from this morning, why you think prema bhakti is worth attaining for you. You're not going to share this with anybody. This is just for you. Can I really need an essay with some water? See, you can come up with at least three reasons why you would like to attain prema bhakti. Have them be your own reasons. Don't have them be reasons that you think are just like correct, you know. Anyone have any ideas how we can increase our desire to attain prema bhakti? Yes.
Reduce the selfishness of your desires.
Okay. Somebody else. How can we increase our desire to attain prema bhakti? Yes.
Look at devotees who are already there.
Look at the devotees who are already there. Yes. Excellent.
Read Krishna Leela.
Read Krishna Leela. Yes. The more you read about what it's like to be there. I mean, that's how people go any place. They read about Japan, and so they want to go to Japan, you know, or they, whatever, you hear about it.
Chant attentively.
Yes, if you chant attentively, you'll see Krishna. You'll see Krishna. Yes.
Try to be very humble.
Try to be very humble. The word try is a funny word. I'm not putting you down. I do it also. But it implies failure. So what you might want to do, there's a large connection, unfortunately, because if you know this, you can use it to your advantage, between the language that we use and the way we think about things. So did I give you time to say to folks the well-formed plan seminar at some point in my history with you guys? Right, and I talked about putting things in the positive. So whenever we use the word try, we imply that we might fail. Probably better to use words like work on humility. Self-talk is important. The language that we use in dealing with ourselves is not unimportant. Okay, yes, work on humility, because of all the qualities, humility is the chief. If you look in Bhagavad Gita 13th chapter at the beginning, when Krishna talks about the process of knowledge, it's very interesting that he says the process of knowledge is not things like sitting down and studying. But the process of knowledge is certain qualities and certain frames of mind. And the chief of those is humility. Okay, any other ways we can increase our desire to attain prema bhakti? Yes?
Follow the rules and regulations given by the acharyas to the highest extent.
Follow the rules and regulations given by the acharyas to the highest extent. Yes, why will that help us desire to attain prema bhakti, by the way? I really like that answer. I would not have answered that way, and I really thank you very much. One of the most important things to do in developing the desire to attain prema bhakti, to get you to the top of the hill so you can pull out your sled and go sledding down the other side, is to adopt the mood of the great devotees, to take on their mood. And one way to take on their mood is to follow their lifestyle, to follow their instructions. Now, I would have said to follow it because it will make you clean, so that you'll be able to understand things from the right perspective, but your answer is actually much better answer than I would have given. Because taking up the mood of the acharyas is actually more important. And this is one reason, one of the most significant things you can do, and it was advice given to me when I asked this question of many of the most senior and advanced Vaishnavas in our movement, was they said, meditate on the songs of the acharyas. Like Satchinandan Swami was talking about reading Sharanagati. Mm-hmm. So associating with great devotees and taking up their moods doesn't necessarily mean that you're sitting, that you're sitting 3 feet from them. There's many ways to do that, and one way particularly is to get into their songs, especially Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottama Das Thakur. And there's a number of ways that you can do this. First of all, these songs are recorded, and you can play them. And especially those of you from Indian background, you may be able to understand the songs in the original language. If you can't, you can play recordings in English. Amala Bhakti Prabhu has recorded in English the whole Sharanagati and Gitavali. It's just a joy to listen to. It's something that I personally like to listen to over and over and over and over and over again. To get in that mood. And there's a devotee, Dhruva Maharaj, who's recorded, I think, Prema Chandrika of Narottama Das Thakur, that has the Sri Guru Charana Padma song that we sing for Guru Puja. I don't have that, but it's something that I plan on getting. And one can also make a habit of taking some of these prayers and learning them. Pick one or two and learn them. Learn them in the Bengali or learn them in the English. you know, if you can't, if the Bengali just sounds like a bunch of mumble jumble to you. Like I was asking some of the devotees the other day, what does Nikunja Yuno Rati Keli Siddhayi mean from the Guru Vastaka? Nobody could tell me. You know, people growing up in the movement, they're thinking we're offering our obeisances to groceries every morning. So if when you not everybody got that one. Bande Guroshri Charna. So if listening, no, it's a little delayed, but so if when you're listening to the Sanskrit or Bengali, you know, all you're hearing is Bande groceries, then you might want to say it in English. If you're able to get some, you know, internal understanding that when you're saying the songs in the original language, that you can get a feel for what you're saying, then learn them in the original language because it's very beautiful. But, it only takes about 3 minutes a day to sing one of those songs. You know, you can stand before the deities in your house with some pitcher, and that's all it takes. And it can set the mood for the whole day. You know, so getting into the mood. I mean, reading Prabhupada's books also, we're not just reading Prabhupada's books for intellectual understanding, but also to get in Prabhupada's mood, to understand what is Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada said that the purports were his own ecstasies. What was his preaching mood? And taking up the mood of the Vaishnavas is a very strong, powerful way to develop the urge to develop Prem Bhakti. Yes?
If you haven't got a deity at home, you've just got a picture. Can you get a message from a picture?
Of course.
Just a normal profile?
Of course.
The same as with a deity?
Of course. In fact, if you have a deity you're worshipping irregularly, better to have a photograph. Yes.
We discussed this morning. We were talking about questions and answers session that Krishna actually resides in the deity because we do like an installation kind of thing. So does Krishna also reside in that picture, or because there's no installation done for the picture? So how do you get?
That is a very good question. That's why I like coming here with you guys. Where's you guys? You ask us intelligent questions. It's one reason why it's so much fun. Krishna is the same as his name, and Krishna is the same as his form, always. So just like someone, I think you were asking, was asking that, you know, if offenses on chanting can block the holy name, are the offenses stronger than the holy name? Mm-hmm. No, but the holy name chooses to reveal himself where he's liked. So as soon as you depict Krishna's form, Krishna is there personally. But to what extent do you realize him? The idea of installing the deity is you're not only depicting Krishna's form, but you're personally inviting him. And you're inviting him basically with a promise. It's kind of like you guys invited me here, and there was, you didn't say it, but I understood that if I came here, you'd feed me. Do you understand?
Yeah.
I wasn't invited here on the condition that I'd have to find my own meals in the local village. That'd be interesting, wouldn't it? So when you install the deity, you're saying, Krishna, if you come, you can think of it either way, that you're inviting him as your honored guest, or you're recognizing that he's the master of the house and you're his guest, which is a little bit better. Well, one's more reverential and one's more intimate. But anyway, when you're inviting him in, you're saying, you come and I guarantee you I'm going to feed you every day. I'm going to serve you. I'm going to take care of you. Now, not that God needs you to take care of him, but we need to take care of him. And we're enjoying that relationship. So you're not doing that with the picture. You're not saying, Krishna, if I invite you in this form, I'm going to, you know, there's not that kind of guarantee going on. But yes, Krishna's still there. There's some difference in how you're serving them. You know, if you email me, I'm still there, but you're not feeding me.
Yeah.
I'm there in the email. But you don't have to give me any food. When I come here, you better feed me. Now I get fed very well. Somewhere too well, you better feed me too well. I have to keep taking 2/3 of the stuff off the plate. Okay, how else can we... Everything's so good, I want to eat all of it. How else can we develop a desire to attain Prem Bhakti? Yes. Ah, so a negative one. By thinking how much we don't want to be here. I should just mention very briefly for those who are into psychology. Somebody said to me today, you're really into psychology stuff, I can tell. I said, oh, yeah. part of that probably comes from having taught K through 12 and run a K through 12 school for, you know, 25 years, where I've had to teach almost every subject K through 12. So you kind of get this broad, it's not very deep, but you kind of get this broad, you know, 1 centimeter deep and 3 miles broad knowledge. So anyway, there's different ways of measuring personality types. Did I ever teach you guys personality types? Yeah, I taught you the DISC stuff, right? And we went over a few other types. So there's one type that's a subsidiary of Myers-Briggs, for those of you who know about such things. And one of the subsidiaries is whether you're toward or away from, primarily. And the toward people, they're mostly motivated by the positive. And the away from, they're mostly motivated by the negative. If you do a lot of negative self-talk to motivate yourself, I didn't do anything good today. Today was just useless. I don't know what I did today. I got to do better tomorrow. Then you're probably mostly an away from, you know? And if you're like, well, I got a half an hour's worth of good stuff done today, and tomorrow I'm going to be even better. Usually some of us are somewhere on the continuum, but a little bit more one or the other. So, yes, some of us are going to be more motivated by wanting to get away from the miseries of the material world, and some of us are going to be more motivated by going to Krishna. And you'll notice this, this is definitely an aside, but just interesting. Hope you don't mind my tangent here. That you'll notice in speakers, in lecturers, if you listen to them over a long period of time, whether they're more towards or away from? Are they really emphasizing, Maya is terrible, terrible, you don't want to be in Maya. Or are they emphasizing, oh, Krishna. And does the Shastra have both? And by the way, as many of you are also preachers, remember that your audience is full of both towards and away froms, and you better have some of both in your classes, or you'll fail to motivate half of your audience. If you only speak about the towards, your away froms won't relate to you at all. Feel like, yeah, right, sure. Yeah. And if you only have the away froms, it's like, oh, he's some negative pessimist, you know, and nobody, they won't be interested. So you do, and the scripture has some of both, doesn't it? Where are the away froms in Bhagavatam? Some scholar. What sections of Bhagavatam deal with the away froms? 12 can't tell, yeah. How the hellish aspects of Kali Yuga. What else? Yeah? Fifth canto. Thank you. And what parts of the fifth canto? For instance, fourth canto. What parts of the fifth canto?
Hellish planet.
Hellish planet. Something else in the fifth canto. What else? The part that householders don't like to read. Anybody know? The forests of material enjoyment. If you are motivated by how nasty the material world is, read that section regularly. It will motivate you for Krishna Prema. The story of King Paranjana, yes. There's some other sections. What sections of the Bhagavatam deal mostly with the towards? And it can't. What else? Yeah, the eighth has both, of course. One thing I remember is that, you know, Prabhupada says it's best to read Bhagavatam from beginning to end, and we used to have a hot off the press account, and we would get Prabhupada's books as they were being translated. And at that time, I thought that I'd never catch up to Prabhupada, so I was reading frantically at one point when my oldest kid was an infant, and I thought I was just in Maya at home with the kid, and I couldn't be out preaching like all the other real devotees. And I was spending my time really studying Prabhupada's books. It's funny how often the circumstances that we think are least favorable for our spiritual life may in retrospect prove to be the ones that are most favorable. That's another tangent. But anyway, so when I was reading and I was reading through the second canto, and how many of you here have read the second canto Bhagavatam? Wow. That's amazing. Very nice. Is the second canto Bhagavatam fun reading?
Partial.
Very partial. It's very technical. It's very, very philosophical. To people who are really interested in science and the philosophy of science. And if people who are really interested in epistemology will find the second canto quite interesting. Same with Lord Kapiladeva's instruction in the third canto. But it's a little heavy stuff for most people. But I was reading it obediently because Prabhupada says, you know, read through the Bhagavatam straight through. So I was reading it and, you know, calculation of time by the atom and the relationship between the senses and the sense objects and how do we know things and how do we know what's real and what's the relationship to the universal form. And what was interesting is I had to take a university class in philosophy of science, and I thought, wow, this stuff is so much better explained than the second and third canto Bhagavatam. Anyway, I'm reading through this stuff, and then what at the beginning of the third canto? Be beginning of the third kingdom. Yes, Hiranyaksha and Lord Varaha. So I get to the second canto, you know, all this heavy stuff for this woman with a Kali Yuga brain who can't follow philosophy very well, and I get to the battle. I don't think I slept that night. So it's not just Krishna, you know, not just Krishna and Vrindavan, but all of Krishna's incarnations. Right? It's exciting stuff, isn't it? Wouldn't you like to see the battle between Hiranyaksha and Lord Varaha? Wouldn't it be cool? Wouldn't you like to see something like in 3D IMAX? One of you's got to do that. That's exciting. You know, you read the Mahabharata, and one of my favorite pastimes is when Arjuna's fighting with Karna, and Karna's chariot wheel gets stuck, you know, and Arjuna doesn't know that Karna's really his half-brother. There's this whole secret thing going on. And then Krishna says to Arjuna, kill him now. And Arjuna says, we can't kill him now. It violates the Kshatriya code. He said, he violated all the Kshatriya codes. Kill him now. And Karna tries to invoke his mystic missiles, and he can't do it, and he can't remember, and he remembers he was cursed. That because he lied to his guru, he'd lose all his knowledge just when he needed it. Right? And because he killed the cow, his chariot wheel was going to get stuck in the mud, and it all comes together. All the threads of all the plots come together. Arjuna kills him, and he sees Krishna, so he goes back to God. I always like Karna. I wrote an article about Karna for BTG. And finally, Karna was one of my poems, too, because I went with the article. So wouldn't you like to see that? Why don't you like to see that battle between Arjuna and Karna? Very good. Or one of my favorites is 8th canto, with the battle on the shore of the ocean of milk. Do you remember what they were riding on?
Yeah.
What were they riding on?
Rabbits.
Rabbits, what else? People? They were riding on people? And what else? Red-faced monkeys and white-faced monkeys? I mean, wow, what a story, you know? They're churning this ocean of milk, and then you've got Kurma there, and his back's getting scratched. And, you know, when the demons say, we are very aristocratic, we want to hold the head of the serpent. The demigod should hold the tail. And the demigods were kind of offended. Lord Vishnu says, let them do what they want. And so the demons are holding the head of Vasuki, and Vasuki's breathing out all the smoke, and the demons are covered with all the smoke, and they can't breathe, but they're too ashamed that to say that they made a mistake, because they're so puffed up, you know. And all these things are coming out of the ocean, and the poison's coming out, and she was drinking it, and, you know, the goddess of fortune comes, and Ujjayi-shrava, and then they finally get the nectar, right, and the demons grab it, and then Lord Krishna comes in the only form that the demons appreciate. They don't appreciate it. And they say, we'll do whatever you want. And she says, are you sure? I don't know if you should trust me. I'm a woman walking alone. Oh, we'll trust you. And she says, all right. You just sit there and you wait. We'll come back. And she gives all the nectar to the demigods. And then when they finally realize what's going on, you know, cuts off Rahu's head. Comes back and isn't that wonderful? Wouldn't you like to see that? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd like to see that. So we have both. And yeah, so by reading the scriptures, by associating, any other ways that we can get an impetus to attain prema bhakti? Yes?
Guarantee that you won't get heartbroken.
Yes, it's a guarantee you won't get heartbroken. Absolute guarantee. In this material world, you're guaranteed you will get heartbroken. Guaranteed you'll be heartbroken. I think if you really want to see this, hang around with elderly materialistic people. You know, spend some time in an old age home. And then decide, is that what I want? I know most of you don't think this ever going to happen to you, but, you know, a little sense. Any other way we can have an eagerness to develop prema bhakti?
Because then we can selflessly give it to others.
Because then we can, oh, what a nice guy. Because then we can selflessly give it to others. Wow. How do you both? This stuff is really important. Okay? It's really, really important. We have to constantly, as Satchin Annamara said, you've got to feed the right dog. Yeah? And I hope I'm not stealing some of his thunder here. But a lot of the way we do that is by cultivating a desire for prema bhakti. And there's probably another 15 or 20 ways that we haven't discussed. How do you go? I don't mind children, sir. I like children. Children are our most valuable asset. All right. The last thing that I'd like us to do now is we were talking about what are our blocks to making progress. Right? We talked about that there are basically three main categories of blocks. The reactions are our past, past, and sinful activities. Getting attached to enjoying material things that come with bhakti, and also our offenses. And that the main offenses we have to be concerned about are the offenses against the holy name, and among those offenses, the main one we have to be concerned about as far as practical action is being attentive. But that doesn't mean we should go around offending devotees. You know, and saying, well, Mother Hummel said, oh, I have to really be paying attention. Please don't do that. I'd like you to, right now, again, on your own, but we are going to share this with someone, if you like. If you like. If you choose not to share this with somebody, that's fine. But I am going to ask you to share this with some person next to you, and if you don't trust them, move a little bit over to somebody that you'd like to share it with. And if you don't trust anybody, keep it to yourself and just share it with Krishna. But I'd like you right now to think about and write down, this is for yourself, mostly, to think about some, and be honest, please. You're not trying to impress anybody. Think about what is some major anartha, what is some major unwanted thing that has contributed to producing these symptoms of unsteadiness. Now, these symptoms of unsteadiness, these are symptoms of the fact that our little creeper is still sick. Right? False confidence, sporadic endeavor, indecision, can't give up bad habits, can't take up good habits, and trying to enjoy the material aspects of bhakti. These are symptoms. And they're caused by our basic anartha. Some other symptoms that are also mentioned are things like sleepiness, falling asleep when you're trying to remember Krishna, falling asleep in chanting, and falling asleep in hearing. Other things are just disinterest. You know, there's scripture class going on, or japa's going on, or kirtan's going on. I saw in one kirtan not too long ago, at a big festival, devotees there, what do you call it, IMing his friends, you know, in the middle of the kirtan. So it's instant messaging, you know, text messaging. So that's disinterest. I have it right in front of me, I have Krishna right in front of me, and I'm sitting there, you know, sending out my email messages in the middle of the, instead of looking at the deity. And the other thing is basically thinking that other things are more important. Thinking, yeah, Krishna consciousness is important, but other things are more important. So those are both causes and symptoms of unsteadiness. I like you to think, in terms of generally what we've been talking about, is something that you know in your own life, something that you feel is a major block. Okay? Just take like 1 or 2 minutes and write that down, that you'd like to deal with. And something that you think you can deal with, like in the next 2 weeks. You don't have to agonize over it. It doesn't have to be like some, you know, life thing. The process I'm having you go through is as important as the specific details of it. Now I'd like you to think of something that you're doing well, that's contributing to your becoming steady, that you'd like to do better at. Something that you're really happy about in your spiritual progress, but you'd like to improve, or that could be improved. And please write that down. That you could do something, again, that's probably doable in the next couple weeks. Thank you. Okay, now for the next steps, those of you who practice well-formed plan will find this really easy. Yes, I know I'm away from all my microphones, and that's just the way it is. Okay, so take for the thing now, that's the block. I want you to write what positive thing you want to replace that with. What you want to do instead. Instead of criticizing devotees, I'm going to praise devotees. Instead of sleeping during my japa, I'm going to be awake during my japa. Write it down. It works if you work. Okay, now you should have two things. You should have one thing that's some difficulty that you want to do something else instead of, and you have one thing that you're already doing well and you want to do better. Does everybody have that? About three quarters of you do. The rest of you are here just to decorate the room. Doing a good job of that, but I'm not quite sure. That will help you in the long run. Okay. The next thing is you want to get to specifics. If you're already specific, then you're way ahead of the game. Once you get specific, for each of those two, let's say that you'd already achieved it. Let's say you already made that positive improvement, or let's say that you'd already substituted the good thing for the bad thing. How would you know that you had achieved it? What would you be doing, thinking, and feeling if it was already there? If it were present right now, for each of those things, you've got two things, what would you be doing, what would you be thinking, what would you be feeling? So that you and someone else would say, yes, this is what you're doing. I can see by these three symptoms, this is what you're doing. So I say, I don't want to criticize devotees anymore, I want to praise them. Well, what will I do? When I see that a devotee has done something good, I walk up to them and say, oh, Prabhu, it's so wonderful how you were singing in the kirtan this morning. It's so nice that I saw that you in the temple room every day chanting the japa. What will I think? I'll think, let me see if I can find somebody doing something that I can praise. Let me look for some good qualities in others. What will I be feeling? I'll be feeling, wow, if that devotee can do something nice for Krishna, maybe there's hope for me too. That's an example. You might come up with something good. Come up with something that's meaningful for you. Again, something that you could probably do in the next couple weeks. Don't make it some major life thing that's going to take 50 years. This works if you work. All right, so let's say the thing that I'm doing, I'll give you another example. I'm doing something good that I'd like to do better. Let's say that I'm reading Bhagavad Gita once a week for an hour on the weekends. And the thing that I'd like to do better is I'd like to read with more quality and more thought. So what specific things could I do? Maybe I could take notes. What could I be thinking? I'd be thinking that if I really read this with quality and with thought, then I'll be able to preach better. Or if I really read this with quality and with care, then I'll be more enthused for praying with bhakti. Those are some examples. How could I be feeling? I could be feeling, wow, here's my opportunity to get to the top of the mountain where I can fly down on the sled. This is an example. Is that classic? That's not the right thing to do. Just that's a sample. Do what's meaningful to you. Okay, we are going to do one last quick thing, and we only have about 5 more minutes. Does anyone have any really urgent, intense, burning question that hopefully I can answer quickly? Something, a real area of just like total confusion, like I've got to get this settled. Okay, what I'd like you to do now, and yes?
Sorry.
No, it's not sorry.
Is it better to chant less round attentively as opposed to more round intentively?
Very, very good question. Is it better to chant fewer rounds attentively than more rounds inattentively? You're kind of setting up a false dilemma. In other words, why do you have to make that choice? This question is asked all the time. And my question to you is, why are you asking that question? Why does that choice exist?
Attachment.
Why do I think that there's a choice between chanting 4 rounds with attention and 8 rounds inattentively? Why are those the options? Why is that what's on the menu? Who decided that was going to be those are the either or options? Think about that. I'm not asking you to answer that question, but I'd like you to think about it. And the other thing that I'll bring up is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that one aspect of attentive chanting is being attentive to quantity. That is one aspect of attentiveness. Therefore, we suggest that people take a vow to chant a certain number of rounds. Now, you might start out with a vow to chant 1 round. And it's interesting, in extra devotion, Prabhupada talks about over-endeavor, that you should avoid over-endeavor. Do you know how he defines over-endeavor? Taking spiritual vows you can't keep. So if you say, I'm going to chant 16 rounds a day, and you just can't, won't, or whatever, you don't, it's too much for you, that's a kind of over-endeavor. So it's certainly better to do something small well than something big poorly. But once you've made a vow that you're going to do something big, then you have to do something big well. You know, once you make a determination like that, it's almost like asking, what's better for a meal, 1 good prep or 10 lousy preps? I mean, why are those the options? Obviously, 10 good preps are better. Why do I have to choose between those? You know, do what you can do and do it well. And then whatever you stick to, stick to and do it well. But there is an offense of inattention just by not keeping up the quantity also. Is that reasonable? You know, if I say that I'm going to serve you 3 meals a day, and instead of doing that, I serve you 1 quality meal, are you going to be satisfied with that? I don't think so. What would you prefer, 3 poor meals or 1 quality meal? I mean, what kind of a question is that? You know, if I told you I was only going to serve you 1 meal and I serve you 1 good meal, you'll be happy. But if I say, you come to my house, I'll serve you 3 meals every day and only give you 1, but it's really good. You know, so just think about that. What I'd like to do now is, we just have a couple minutes, if you want to, if you do it, it will be helpful to you, but if you feel uncomfortable, then don't do it. I'm not going to insist on it. Take what you've just written down and share it with someone that you trust. But the reason that this is helpful is when we share our commitment, we're more likely to follow through on it. Okay, thank you very much. All glory to the Prabhupada.